From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we launch our 21st year on the air.
21st.
So I guess we're old enough to drink, I guess. Or vote.
Depends what country you're
in. No, vote's
in.
18 now. See, when I was a kid, you had to be 21 to vote.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Talk about it. A demographic switch. That's an extra 3 years.
I had no idea.
Yeah. We were talking with Cecilia Flores, the Programs Director for Catholic Charities of Yolo Solano.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us.
I know. Always fun to be here.
As always. You've worked with so many different groups since you've been in the diocese.
I have.
You've worked with Newman groups and various youth groups and now you're with Catholic Charities.
That's what I'm doing now, yes.
Tell us a little bit about your position. And I know you spent a lot of time in Vallejo, a lot of time in Woodland.
Yes.
So Solano County, Yolo County.
Yolo and Solano. I'm the programs director, so I oversee all of the programs that we run. So out of our Vallejo office, which has been open for the longer time,
right.
We have immigration and legal services there. We also have counseling, so low-cost access to counseling, whether it's couples, individual, children, things like that.
Right.
And we also have family assistance, and that department helps with access to food. So there's a food pantry. We help people apply for CalFresh, which is most commonly known as food stamps for people. We help with rental assistance. We help people secure housing through helping with move-in costs and all kinds of things like that.
Wow.
Yeah. And then out of Woodland right now, we do our we just offer at the time right now immigration legal services.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So, of course, Yolo County is, you know, West Sacramento and Davis and Woodland and all the way up
Winters.
To Winters. Yeah. And I live in Davis, and I always say we're surrounded by the W's, Woodland,
That's
Winters,
right.
West Sacramento, and then there's an area just outside Davis named Willowbank. So one's on the south, one's on the west, one's on the north, and one's on the
I've never heard of Willowbank. I've heard of the rest, though.
Willowbank is
that a city?
An old development on the edge of Davis, but it's not part of the city limits. A little bit like El Macero.
It's not in the city, but
people think it's part of Davis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's contiguous to Davis, but actually out of the city limits.
Yeah.
And then Solano, of course, we have Dixon and Vacaville and Fairfield and Vallejo.
Venetia. Yeah.
And Elmira.
Elmira, yes.
Have you been out to Elmira?
I've seen the sign, and I've never personally been out that way, though. No.
Yeah. It's a little tiny place.
Yeah, and that's out of Vacaville, right?
Yeah, it's kind of it's a little bit south of Vacaville and a little bit east.
Yeah,
but it's got maybe 50 people. Has an elementary school.
I heard there's a post office there.
Yeah, there's a post office. That's the job you want.
The only one.
Oh, hi.
Yeah, so we cover all of that
area
as well.
So a lot of, urban area, but a lot of rural as well.
Yeah,
Yolo goes all the way up to Dunnigan.
Yeah, so you've got a county like Yolo where, there are more urban-type hubs, especially like West Sacramento is right on the edge of the city, and Davis that's a little more developed, and inner Woodland is kind of growing and booming. But outside of that, when I drive to Winters, I feel like I'm so far when I'm like, wow, I'm actually only like maybe half an hour at most from Vacaville. Like, how did that happen? But it feels so rural. And most of Solano is more developed for the most part. But there's still pockets. Dixon is one where it's still very rural. Vacaville also has its spot. So it's an interesting demographic.
Well, yeah, it's interesting to the, Vallejo, Benicia, you think of as basically Bay Area. North Bay.
Mm-hmm. And some people even consider Fairfield Bay Area
because
it is still pretty
close. Tremendous amount of commuting from all the way down to West Sacramento, really, to the Bay Area. But you're right. And of course, Fairfield is an awful lot of commuters. And then Travis Air Force Base has been such a big deal there. And whereas Dixon has that rural, you drive down Main Street and they're still selling tractors.
Yeah.
So
it still feels like a small town.
It really does.
It's got that small town charm. So it's interesting to kind of figure out what the needs are in what places, because the needs in a place like Vallejo, a lot of things we have coming into that office are really housing needs. You know,
yeah.
it's considered Bay Area, so the sure. prices are Bay Area, and the rent, and you know, the development and the increasing rent costs and housing costs is a bigger problem there than it might be in somewhere that's closer to Sacramento. Even though in Sacramento, it's
yeah,
I mean, it's kind of climbing up here too. But you know,
yeah, that's my next question is are the needs? I mean, you look at a little town like Knight's Landing, which is about as far north as you can go in Yolo County before you cross over the river and get into another county, and a place like Vallejo or yeah. Fairfield or places in Vacaville where the housing prices are just so, or Davis where the housing prices have just gone
oh gosh,
through
yeah.
the roof,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the notion of, I know the governor's very concerned about it, the mayor of Sacramento is very concerned about the lack of affordable housing,
mm-hmm.
and for so many little towns, you know, they for a while they have these kind of no growth policies. Like I got mine, and you know, and,
this is we're not building anything here and
yeah,
there. Yeah,
and mm-hmm. and they, you know, I understand they like the rural, they like the, you know, the ag land, and yet you look at some of the areas that are really rural and a lot of poverty.
Yeah,
right in the midst of great wealth.
Mm-hmm. We've seen stuff like that definitely, like in places like Dixon, Winters, mm-hmm. Knight's Landing, those, you know,
right.
even pockets of Vacaville that are more toward the Delta side.
Right.
Or they're, I think what we've seen, if you want to compare the two, now there's poverty in extreme forms in both, right? But one of the things that I would say about the rural areas is that what is there is more of an access problem.
Uh-huh.
There's just less services. In a place like Vallejo, where maybe we're not able to provide the assistance they need for whatever reason, there's multitude of options, you know,
right.
they could go to. Well, they can't get an appointment with us and they need it this week. They can try this agency. They can try
right.
that nonprofit. They can go to that church, right? There's many options.
Exactly.
Whereas in a place like Dixon, there's maybe nothing. And, you know, people tend to say, well, they can just drive to wherever, you know, and I mean, if you have the luxury of a car or a normal work schedule or flexible, yeah,
yeah,
or a flexible work schedule where you're able to do that, that I think sometimes we kind of take for granted when we do live around many things that, you
right.
know, for them it is hard. I know we recently offered an immigration legal services clinic on a Sunday in Dixon
mm-hmm.
at St. Peter's Parish,
uh-huh.
working with Father Hector Montoya. And we had the whole time we were there, people arriving to they just wanted a consult to ask
right.
for advice, you know, and they kept asking, when are you going to come back? You know, and we tell them, well, we're going to try to schedule another clinic on site during the weekend, but you know, we do have offices, but for them, they're like, well, we, you know, we're farm workers. We work Monday through Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
You're not open when we're
right.
open, or I don't own a car, and you know, Woodland is far and it's hard to, you know, and it's
sure.
so we've kind of looked at kind of shifting the model in places like that of bringing the services to them
right.
rather than expecting them to come to us, because in our mind, you know, we think it's close and we think it's
yeah.
not that far, which I have a car, so it isn't that far. And I'm
sure.
able to, you know, take time off work to go to an appointment if I need to nearby. But for a lot of people, especially people experiencing poverty, that isn't the case. So
yeah.
it kind of makes you shift a little as far as what we think is easy. And you have to put yourself in the perspective of the person that's experiencing that and realize, like, well, that's a lot more complicated for
yeah.
them than it might be for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And of course, we're right in the middle of the campaign, the annual Catholic Appeal.
We are.
And, Northern California Charities is certainly one of those that will see a tremendous benefit and able to serve more people. Talk about, you know, people say, well, doesn't the government take care of all this stuff? You hear that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not true.
Yeah, and you know, we do some of our programs that we offered are government funded, so I think
sure.
people might not know that.
Then yeah, that is not a violation of the separation of church
no,
and state.
No.
You know, the notion I think of the founders and the current notion, whether it's a Supreme Court ruling or whatever, is that charities that are faith-based should be on equal footing with charities that are not faith-based. That way you're not favoring religion, but you're not discriminating
yes,
against religion.
Yes, exactly.
And you're not feeding people or helping people with immigration service or anything else, trying to convert them to the
no,
faith.
No, no.
If they one day become Catholic, that's great. But you're not saying, okay, well, we'll only help you if you
if you convert, yeah, we never ask that question at all, right? It's not a qualification. I think some people might have that conception. Well, it's Catholic charities, you have to be Catholic to get help there, and that's not the case at all.
Exactly.
You know, we don't help them because they're Catholic. We help because we are Catholic, and that's part of our identity. So, yeah, we do. You know, people wonder about how we're funded, and we do have grants that are state grants or federal grants and things like that where we're able to help. With certain things under certain guidelines and requirements, of course, but we do depend a lot on donations and
such as the Anti-Catholic Appeal.
Exactly.
You know, and with the appeal, you know, there's so many wonderful ways to donate. I know my wife and I, our kids too, we always put it over 12 months. You know, make an annual pledge, and you know, you think, oh, I can't afford that, but when you divide it by 12, it becomes a lot more.
Yeah, looking at the budget, right, and saying, okay, well, for a month, we can do this,
right.
You know, and maybe it's a little stretch, but this is what we can do.
Exactly, exactly. And there was just a story in the paper the other day about some charity that just used telemarketers, and you know, it's one of those feel good names, you know, and
tell me more,
and. The telemarketing firm took 90, like they call you up and hi, save the something.
Yeah.
You know? and you go, oh yeah, sounds good. Yeah. And you give them $100. The telemarketing firm was taking 90 of that.
Oh my.
And the charity's getting 10.
10%.
It was a front page story in the Bee the other day. And you look at Catholic Charities. And you just flip that. It's like 97 or 90. It's just the people get.
Yeah.
I mean, this goes directly to services for people in need.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I think what they usually divide the pie, you know, to show where things go. And administrative costs are very low.
Exactly.
Bang for the buck.
The
yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think it's people are very concerned about where their money goes nowadays.
Exactly.
You know, we've seen so many different things and there's so many different ways to fundraise now.
Sure.
Too, you know, a lot of people put a GoFundMe campaign up for something or if they have a trip or if they're in need, you know, their family will put something up. I've seen many of those, you know, I'm sure you have as well, that circulate on social media when some kind of tragedy happens. So I think I think the human heart is just kind of moved, you know, by stories and seeing people that are suffering in whatever way and form that is, you know. And I know every year the appeal comes and it's like, here they are again asking for money for the appeal. But, you know, having worked in charities and also, you know, being a person who when I was a missionary, we were also fundraising funded. You know, when you see the work that people are able to do because of your donations, you know, it's like, it sounds so cheesy, but it's true. It's true. We couldn't do the work that we do without the donations that we receive from the annual Catholic Appeal.
Yeah. And, you know, people go, well, gee, haven't we solved this problem? Haven't we solved that problem? In fact, it's not a matter of solving problems. It's a matter of dealing with people in need. What, you know, and I mean, even in the Bible, it says the poor will always be among you. And that doesn't mean, oh, well, don't worry about that. Don't
try
to solve
that. Yeah, well, Jesus said they'd be poor. So,
I mean, how many times are the poor mentioned in the Bible?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and taking the care of the poor. Look at Matthew 25.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I still am amused and also kind of nodding my head in agreement when Pope Francis at World Youth Day said, I know you guys are busy.
I didn't know he said that. What else did he say?
I know you guys can't read that whole book.
Oh.
So read Matthew 25 and go out and do it.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't know he said that. That's
I think
great.
It was in real.
That he probably, I mean, that's something he would say.
It sounds so like something he would say.
Yeah. So I'm not surprised at all.
And you know, and you look at that and you go, there are all kinds of issues in the world. Many of them very, very important, but when Jesus talked, he said, so let's do all of them. Let's, you know, and one of them, you know, to visit the people in prison really struck me. It's not one you'd think, okay, what would Jesus tell you to, okay, feed people and clothe people and maybe visit people who are lonely.
House them.
House them. But people in prison. He doesn't say because they're wrongly convicted or because they're political prisoner. He just says visit them.
Yeah, all of them, right? He doesn't say he doesn't, only visit the ones we believe not to be guilty, right? Like he doesn't say that.
it's pretty profound.
Yeah. I think too sometimes people kind of it turns into a battle of, you know, what are you contributing to? You know, well, I donate to this and I don't
support. That's more important than that.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't, it's like what you're saying. The Bible, Jesus does not in any way put those in order as far as, you know, people need to eat. You know, we don't need to have, you know, in the end, when we talk about Catholic social teaching, we talk about integral human development. That's addressing all of their needs so that people can grow and flourish as Jesus and God wanted for us, you know. So, I hate when people get into these battles of, you know, I just want to help people. So if that's how you like to help people, that's great, you know. And I think some of it, too, is like one, personality, but two, like your personal story. Some people are moved to help children because when they were a child, they didn't have those things, right? So they're just very touched by that. Some people have experienced things, and because of their experience, they want to help people who have gone through a similar experience to them, you know, like domestic violence or things like that, right? So I think we have to, as church, kind of remember that we're all parts of the body working together, and it applies in the same way in when it comes to charity, when it comes to service, because we can't all, you know, what help would it be if we were all building houses, right? If all of us just build houses for the homeless and no one was cooking food for them, well, you know, there'd still be a lot of problems. It'd be a lot more lopsided.
Well, you're exactly right. And, you know, your human body is actually a pretty good example of, I remember, well, last night, our son, our youngest, he got an ear infection, apparently, after he went to bed. And he wakes up in the middle of the night. And you could say, it's just his ear. But it dominated him. You know, I mean, completely dominated him because the pain was you know, especially in young kids, ear infection. And, whoa, it's like out of sight, and he's much better today.
Oh, good.
But you know, and you know, you've got arthritis in your hand, and it dominates you. You know, and it's just your hand. You know, and all these things. You know, you think, well, it's not your heart, it's not your lungs. But it, and that's the way it is with our society. Mm-hmm. If somebody's hurting, it hurts the whole society.
It does. It does. And I think maybe because, you know, In the U.S., I think it is very much an individualistic culture as compared to other cultures, you know. And so we're kind of just taught to, like, take care of our, you know, we're the culture that we stay in our house for the most part and close the blinds if someone knocks on the door. You know, if you're going to come over, you have to call and we have to schedule that. Not, you know, whereas other cultures that are very much more communal, you kind of see that, people banding together. And I think what we've noticed, I think, over the years is in the U.S., because of so many tragedies, people band together. And, you know, and you see that right after a tragedy happens, the community is mobilized. People start to care again. People start to worry about each other and try to take care of each other. And I think, you know, we don't have to wait for a big tragedy to do that. The fact that any of our human brothers are suffering, the fact that anyone is homeless, the people that, you know, children and people just go without food, like, that's a tragedy in itself. We don't have to wait for this big grand scale to say, you know, now is the time. Now is the time, and the Lord has told us that. It is always time to help the poor.
Well, you look at, like, one of the beneficiaries of the ACA, the Annual Catholic Appeal, would, of course, be Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. You look at the number of people they serve and how efficiently they serve them and the number of programs they offer. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And you go, that's not a governmental organization.
Yeah.
And you know, okay, every now and then, you know, you run into somebody who I guess you could term as anti-Catholic, and they and I say to them, I say, let's just imagine the Catholic Church never existed. Just didn't, or right now in Northern California, there's no Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many people would fall through whatever safety net was there? Mm-hmm. How many people the Catholic Church serves? Just because we're Catholic and we that's what we believe in doing.
Yeah, and, like, not even talking about on a big organizational, like, agency. I mean, look at what the work of St. Vincent de Paul and the parishes do, right?
Exactly.
In every, you know, most parishes have a St. Vincent de Paul, and the work that they do is, you know, it's not something that many people see. You know, they don't advertise, come to St. Vincent de Paul and get, you know, they're very quiet. They visit people in their homes, you know, and they're with people talking to them. The home visit is such an essential part of their spirituality as a ministry, you know, being with people. And you know, we as Catholic Charities, we work with St. Vincent de Paul. We actually get a lot of referrals from them sometimes, you know, when they see a situation, they do a home visit and they realize, you know, this they might need something.
It's more than they
use. Yeah, or it's not within their scope. They'll call us. Do you guys do this? Do you guys do that? And so I think, you know, that's how we can work together is, you know, maybe you and your talents and your gifts and even your schedule work for serving in a certain way. But if we're all aware of how we're helping each other and how we're helping our brothers and sisters, it's not a competition, right? We should be helping each other and saying, well, I can't help you right now because of whatever reason, but I know these people at this agency can help you, or I know this parish offers this, or this agency offers that. And that's really how, you know, I think I've met a lot of people now that I am at Catholic Charities who just ask, you know, do you know anyone who does this? Do you know anyone who can help with that? And it might not be what we do or what we offer, but being able to then say, well, we don't do that, but here's a list of people who do. Even that in itself is a huge help to people. I think many people now you call and it's just like, no, we don't do that. Or I don't know, right?
I don't know.
I don't know. And it's like when a person is in need, it's there's an urgency. And sometimes it's not necessarily that the help that you get or that you're even able to give them the help. We've had so many clients that will just say, you know, maybe they don't qualify for one of our programs and, you know, just the fact that we've received them and that we're helping, we're trying, you know, we can't do that, but I can try to get you the help you need through another another way. You know, that in itself, that they feel like they're being advocated for is a big deal.
I remember years ago, I guess a decade or so ago, when Katrina hit the New Orleans area, and talking to like relief people, not Catholic, just from whatever, you know, FEMA or whoever it was, and about the recovery efforts. And they said, we couldn't have gotten off the ground without St. Vincent de Paul Society and the Knights of Columbus. They said the Knights of Columbus descended on us from all over the country, just showed up, you know, and
the imagery
and
that
the
is
donations
great.
Too. Yeah. Yeah, can't you see the knights just coming in on their horses and their swords?
And their fourth degree uniforms.
Exactly,
I hope.
It made you proud to be Catholic. That, I mean, they saw a need. They didn't care who you voted for or what your situation was or anything else. They're just there to help.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the spirit, right, with which we should move as Catholics. And being able to say, okay, we, you know, if we are blessed enough to have everything that we need, we will most likely have excess, right? I mean, you look at the widow with her one coin in the Bible, you know, and you look at so many examples, you know, the feeding of the thousands with the little boy and his bread, you know. Right. I always look at that story and think, oh my gosh, like if my mom was there, she'd probably be like, we're eating, you know, like she's worried about our own, you know, but this little boy with his bread, he's, you know, he gave it to the Lord so that the Lord could multiply it. So sometimes I think also maybe we don't give because we think it's not going to make an impact. I think that's another thing. Like, well, I can only give $5 a month. What's that going to do?
Yeah.
$5 a month, you know, for you is a lot, but it's you think it's too little. But like how many people are giving $5 a month and how much does that add up, right? And how much can you do with that? So I think don't ever think that, one, that God is judging, you know, the number, quantity, value of your donation, or that anyone, for that matter, you know, is judging that. I think we're all contributing what we can, and that helps in and itself. We don't have to, again, the comparison kills the idea of charity, you know?
It's good for you to do it. And it's good for your family to know you're doing it, for your kids to know you're doing it. Maybe each kid out of their allowance or their chores or whatever, however, maybe they're old enough, they're teenagers and they have a job, you know, and they can donate.
Yeah.
And you go, the fact that you know, you're making $12 an hour or whatever minimum wage is at your job and you're bringing home $50 a week and you just decided to give $10 to help something, that's very important, and it's good for them as well. And I know that with the ACA, they're not only, I mean, you're trying to raise money for sure, but the number of people who participate is very important.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And again, little people doesn't the size of the gift really is it makes an impact at the final number, but really right. I think it's more of creating an awareness within yourself about the sure. need to give in that way. Exactly. I know we've talked about just like, you know, young people don't give, especially young adults, and you know they're and I think we don't really know how to access their giving. I think there's got to be kind of a switch where you activate the knowledge of that. Like, for an example, giving trees at Christmas time, uh-huh. people love those.
Yeah,
you
do.
Know,
yeah.
they might not donate anything all year in terms of monetary funds, but they will take all of those labels off the tree
yeah.
and buy every single thing on the list, even though it says buy one thing, yeah. you know, because there's kind of a connection there. Like
sure.
they understand Christmas. They understand providing a gift for Christmas. So I, you know, this year we did an event and we did the same, you know, it was kind of a toy drive and we had sponsors with the names of, mm-hmm. of kids, and it's kind of, you know, I knew that older people would definitely help, but I also knew this is something that young people, yeah. college students, they'll do this. They yeah. might not set up a monthly $30 donation,
right.
even though they probably could afford it, but they'll do this, right? So you're engaging them in a way that makes them connect, and you're mm-hmm. building the habit right within themselves of not thinking only of themselves, but thinking of other people and knowing that they can give in a way that's tangible and that has an impact. And I think once you do that, it's kind of you're helping them understand. And that really, the younger that you start to do that,
yeah.
the better, because then your children will be growing up in an environment where they know that, you know, there are people in need and they will want to help, you know, and it won't, I think if you don't start that early, they tend to get, you know, kids hate sharing. And, you know, so you have to kind of counteract that kind of natural, like, this is mine within them from an early age and help them be aware of, okay, there are people who need, we have stuff, we should share, you know, and kind
yeah.
of build that language into them from young, from when they're young, so that when they're older, you know, there is an idea of stewardship and
yeah.
there is an idea of helping other people.
It's the hardest thing for a young parent.
Yeah,
yeah, you have the 3-year-old.
Mine hates sharing.
Yeah, and you have the play date, and here are the two kids, and no, mine. And I don't know. We don't teach them that, and yet there it is.
Yeah,
you
this
know,
idea of ownership
kind of
possessiveness,
yeah.
and like, you know, this. And I mean, I have two, and they're really only a year and a half apart, and everything's is... They're very clear about what is theirs and
yeah.
what it's not, and you
yeah.
know, territorial, and they have a very firm understanding of whose is what's.
Yeah.
And they also know when they are playing with something that's not theirs.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So it's interesting to see. I said, you know, if they can figure that out,
yeah.
they can. If they're smart enough to figure that out, they know how to share. So,
yeah.
you know, from early on, getting them involved in little things, you know, and explaining to them. My family, we do constant, you know, cleanups of our house and donations.
Yeah.
We'll drive
yeah.
it to the food bank, but I make sure to involve them in that. You know,
yeah.
if my kid, what are you doing? Well, we're just sorting out our toys to see what we can give away. What do we not use? So starting off something little like that, you know, the food bank takes donations, Goodwill, St. Vincent de Paul. I mean, those are places that take donations.
Yeah. And take them to the grocery store with you or wherever,
yeah.
you know, the clothing store or whatever it is. And, okay, we're getting this for, I know it, in our hometown, they have an adopt-a-family thing at
yes.
Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually, like you were saying, had the ages of the kids.
Yeah.
And, okay, why don't you shop for this kid and why don't you shop for this kid?
Mm-hmm.
And they really get into it. They
yeah.
really get involved in it.
Because I think it's something that they're able to understand,
exactly.
you know. It's a gift for
yep.
someone, you know. And I think as that kind of gets ingrained in them when they're older and they are able, you know, to donate, they're kind of more, I don't want to say conditioned, but maybe, you know, they're in that practice. So doing that is not
right.
as difficult for them anymore because they're used to, oh yeah, we used to. I know my dad, when we were younger, once we all started to work, he always sends money back to the Philippines to help
mm-hmm.
His cousins and,
mm-hmm.
and everyone. So he would literally come around with an envelope.
Oh, wow.
My dad was very straightforward with us, but he would say, you know,
yeah.
well, how much are you giving?
This, uh-huh.
The envelope is there. You know, and it was
yeah.
it wasn't optional. He'd check who already put money in there.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, he was very big on making sure.
Sure
that we knew. You're making money. What are you doing with your money? Are you
right.
helping people with your money? And, you know, I think this is the Starbucks generation. This is the Dutch Bros
yeah.
generation where you're paying $5 a coffee, you know, for a coffee 2 or 3 times a day sometimes, or at least every day. That adds up quick. that adds up so quick. And you realize, you know, start making coffee at home, how much money you're saving, and it tastes just as good. You know, let's kind of see where, how we can help. Cause I think we say, I can't, but really, I don't think, you know, some people just haven't thought about it in an intentional way of, you know, budgeting and even just like practical things like that. You know, how much can I afford? Well, if I just stopped eating one day a week without going to my favorite coffee shop, that's already $20 I could get. You know, the ways that we can sacrifice, because in a way it does have to be something that we give that's ours, right? So for some people, it feels like a bigger sacrifice than others. When I lived in the mission, a part of our formation too was learning to give not just what we didn't want anymore. That hurt. You know, it was kind of like, you know, because I'm used to kind of going, sorting through, okay, well, these don't fit, and like, sure, I don't really wear this. And it's like, well, but would you give the jacket that you love?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, because you have 3 jackets. Would you give someone the one you love and keep the ones you just don't really like anymore?
Yeah.
Would you do? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
But that was kind of the challenge for us, was to do that. And so, you know, sometimes it still comes. I know when I was in Honduras over the summer, when we went with the students from Newman, I gave away my favorite Newman shirt. And it was one that, you know, the students, we made at a night, and it was like tie-dye, and I loved it. And my friend, who is from Nicaragua, that's a missionary for me, she really liked the shirt. And the students of Newman will attest, that was the only Newman shirt that I wore. That was the only one I liked. I hate wearing branded t-shirts, so that was the only one I wore. And, you know, I gave it to her. And everybody asked, you know, there was another event, why aren't you wearing your tie-dye shirt? Why, you know, and I'm like, I gave it away. They're like, you gave it away? That was your favorite shirt. I'm like, don't remind me. Because I really like that shirt still, but, you know, I gave it away. And so it's kind of just this recognition, you know, of like, it's not just about giving, you know, what doesn't work, what is extra, what, you know, doesn't fit, what I don't want, right? But like, how much more is it to give, knowing like, well, I do want to have my coffee from my favorite coffee shop every day, and I can afford that, but I'm going to not do that. So that someone else, you know, so I can donate to this agency so they can provide something to someone in need, right? Like, I think it should hurt, you know, but, you know, there should be a little sense of sacrificing, because that's what keeps you ticking, I think, when you're giving, is you have to remind yourself, you know, that like, I have, but I should help, you know, not just get comfortable and say, well, okay, this is the extra, so, you know, let's shave it off the top, you know?
I remember giving away a favorite t-shirt. You know, college, you know.
That hurt, right?
Yeah, it really hurt. And it gave it to one, you know, one of the, like, SPCA has a thrift store and stuff. And
did you go back and buy it?
No. About 2 years later, it wasn't, we were in a different thrift. I think we were at Goodwill. And there it was on the rack.
I'm sure it was yours.
So somebody got it. Didn't like it.
Eventually redonated it.
You go, wait a minute.
Now, did you buy it at Goodwill?
No. It's pretty funny. You know.
But you recognize it, right?
I recognize it.
I've donated so many things I don't remember, right? But there's some.
It was an obscure college, and I just liked the design on it or something. So the chance that same t-shirt would be, especially in my size, et cetera. No, it was my t-shirt. I think it even had the ketchup stain still on it. You know.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So we're with Cecilia Flores, who is the programs director for Catholic Charities of Yolo and Solano Counties. Tell us a little bit about immigration services. You do that out of Woodland?
We do that out of Woodland and out of Vallejo. And then we do kind of mobile clinics, for example, like the one that we did in Dixon.
How do they find you to begin with?
You can look on our website, and then we have both the office numbers for both of them. But we're located at 125 Corporate Place in Vallejo, which is kind of in South Vallejo. And then we're actually in Woodland. We're on Main Street, 620 Main Street, right there in Woodland. Right. So that's, I love that. I love Woodland. It's just that old town charm, you know.
Really,
so we're right on that
Main
strip.
Street,
yeah, it's great. But, you know, they can drop in the office if they have questions to see what we offer. Most people will come for a consultation, because, you know, there's, what we do is we provide, you know, ways to different legal remedies they may have for whatever their unique situation would be. And we really encourage people to come for a consultation, because people might have heard, you know, well, this is what happened to my neighbor. This is what happened to my mom. And every case is so different. And the laws keep changing and the way policies are implemented keep changing. So it's really important to meet with a legal consultant so that they're able to tell you exactly what your case is.
So do you have lawyers on staff?
We do. We have on-staff lawyer, and we also have DOJ accredited representatives. Uh-huh. So they're not lawyers, but they're accredited by the Department of Justice to be able to give legal advice and to provide the help needed
in
to
this
do the
area.
Process.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's very helpful, I think. That we've had a lot of people come in and realize, you know, they did qualify for something they didn't know they qualified for, some type of relief as far as, you know, getting a work permit or, you know, becoming a citizen. There's people who don't understand those dynamics. And really, some of those things, when you look at the case, are very specific. So you might have everything the same as someone, you know, as far as, you know, how long you've been in the U.S., can you become a citizen? You know, but like, you know, maybe you're a year older and that actually might make a difference in whether or not you have to take the exam in English or if you could you forgo that. Right. So there's a lot of different dynamics. So we really encourage people to, you know, don't just decide like I don't. There's nothing that can be done for me. We've also been encouraging people really to take up, if you're able to become a citizen, really look into doing that now. The prices are going to go up drastically. We're not sure when, but the filing fee to file that application will be going up soon. And there's just a lot of different little things like that. You know, if becoming a citizen is one of the ways to protect, you know, yourself and your family, because at any time policy can change and who knows what could happen. So we really do encourage people to become citizens. And, you know, again, for voting rights, things of just becoming a full functioning member of the U.S. society, I think it's a very good benefit as well.
I mean, citizenship is so valuable.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is. I mean, you can... I think honestly, just about the only right you don't have in this country, once you become a citizen, that I would say a natural born citizen has, is you can't become president.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's all. You know, you can be governor, you can be mayor.
We've seen that here.
my city had the very first Filipino-born mayor in the United States.
Okay, really?
Yes.
Who was that?
Ruth Asmussen.
Oh, yes, that's right. Okay, I've met
very
her.
Very prominent Davis figure.
Was she mayor more than once?
Yeah.
Okay.
What happens is they we have an election every 2 years, and we have 5 seats on the council, and 3 will be up, and then 2 years later, they serve 4-year terms, but 3 will be up in, say, 2016, and then the other 2 in 2018, back to the other 3. Mm-hmm. And whoever's the top vote getter in their election becomes the mayor.
Oh,
it's not there. We don't elect
the
mayor.
You don't run for mayor.
You just run for council. But whoever gets the most votes becomes mayor 2 years later. So halfway through their term. And so I think she did that twice where she was the top vote. She was very, very. And her late husband was mayor back in the 70s.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're a very, very prominent family, but a very strong Catholic family.
Yes, that's right.
And just very generous people and just love the town and the town loves them.
Yeah, you know? No, that's great. You know, and that's again, right? You're right. Like once you become a citizen, you do have all, you know, the ability to do so many things. And just even now with voting, it's so important to vote. And I know you probably get people encouraging that a lot on here. But, you know, it is. And I think there's many young people who don't take advantage of that or don't really see the impact. And I hear that from people even my age all the time. You know, well, it doesn't really matter. We're in California. We're voting for a lot more things than that. You know, there's bills. There's, you know, there's a lot of legislative measures that are super important on a local level that are nothing to do with the higher level.
Exactly.
You know, votes.
I mean, the only thing that, you know, so many states are blue or red when it comes to presidential, but not with so many other things.
Exactly.
You know? And the 18 to 21-year-olds, I just saw a figure in California, 21% voted.
Oh, my goodness.
And we had a constitutional amendment to lower the age from 20, when I was
That well,
18, I couldn't vote.
Oh my goodness!
You know, and
21 in California.
21%. Yeah,
we're gonna have to get the Newman centers on that.
Yeah, that's of registered voters.
Oh yeah, that's right.
You know, and I mean, it doesn't count all the people who didn't even bother to register. And you go, yeah. Wow, it's such. I mean, if you want to change the world, vote. And you know, the California now. Because it used to be, well, I'm not registered. I can't vote. We have an election coming up on March 3rd. You can register the day of the election.
Mm-hmm.
You can go right to the polling place now and register to vote.
There's so many ways, to get all of that done. When you get your driver's license, they just do it all at once.
Exactly.
I mean, there's so many different ways that you can take care of that. Yeah. But, you know, that is something we definitely do encourage of people. You know, the process is called naturalization. So if you are interested, that is a service that we offer as well.
So what's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
Our website has all the information you need, all everyone's emails, phone numbers for both offices. It's www.ccyoso for Yolo Solano.org.
Did you have to argue whether you put Soyo or Yoso?
It was like that when I got there. I'm sure that was discussed.
There is some competition between those counties.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Friendly.
You would know as a Yolo County resident.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Cecilia, always a pleasure to see you. Thanks. For being
always
out there
a pleasure
doing
to
Lord's
be here.
Work for us.
Amen. Yeah. Pray for us.
Indeed.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Yasmin Castellanos from the Catholic School Department, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour, and we're pleased and honored to welcome in Steve Patton. Steve, good day to you.
Hello, Bob.
Good to hear your voice. Sorry it's not in person, but pleased to have you join us. Steve is going to tell us all about the Father-Son program.
Yeah, Bob, this is a program that started actually back in the Diocese of Memphis. And adopted different locations around the country, and thanks be to God, it was adopted by Diocese of Sacramento about 10 years ago when I first started working here. And the program is, there's a sister program, literally. I mean, the mother-daughter program and the father-son program. These are programs for parents and their, adolescent-age children to attend together to get some, helpful information given in a supportive and fun context to help them, especially help the kids to transition from that, you know, age of being children into the age of being adults, which, you know, for all of us is, you know, sometimes not an easy transition. So the father-son program is for fathers and their 12 to 15-year-old sons. And so, you know, it's basically dealing with issues sort of related to, you know, being a man. What does it really mean to be a man? Mm-hmm. You know, what does it mean to be a father? What does it mean ultimately to, you know, to be a husband? So we'll explore all those issues together, and it's going to be fun. I mean, we have a lot of activities, and we joke around with the boys. I mean, it's a serious subject matter, but we do have fun together too. And so it's going to be held at Presentation Parish in Sacramento on Saturday, February 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And there's a lot more information about this. I'll give everyone the website to go to in just a moment. Information about the program, and then also a link to register for it. So it's $20 for a family, and by family I mean the dad and the son, and it can be up to you know, several sons. I mean, sometimes we've had dads mm-hmm. bring two, and sometimes three sons to it. So it's $20 regardless. The website to go to is www.scd.org. That's S as in Sacramento, C as in Catholic, .org/father-son. Okay, all one word, father-son. And like I said, there was information there about the program, and just welcome.
Steve, you say it started in Memphis. How long has it been around?
Well, it's been, I don't know the exact date, Bob. It was actually begun by the Diocesan Natural Family Planning teacher, which some of our listeners may know. Natural Family Planning is a program by which a couple learns, essentially, the woman's cycle of fertility, and then they, you know, make their family planning decisions in accordance with that. They always work with fertility and never work against it. And she, I mean, the author, creator of this program, had seen so often or heard so often from women that she would teach this to, their frustration and their anger, really, at why they hadn't been taught this before. Why did I not know this when I was a teenager and I could have avoided all the mistakes that I made in, you know, in high school and in college and, you know, as a young adult? So she then said, well, I'm going to do something about it. She created this program where, you know, that same essential information that she was teaching about fertility awareness to adults, she was going to, you know, put it in an age-appropriate form for young people and then create the program where the young people could hear the information with their parent. So the mother-daughter and the father-son program was born through that. And like I said, it was in Memphis, I believe it was in the early 80s, and it just really took on. Other dioceses found out about it, and, you know, the model has just, you know, grown ever since.
What sort of age recommendations are there here?
Okay, for, and, you know, while I'm at it, Bob, I might as well also mention there is, you know, going to be a couple more mother-daughter programs in the diocese, as well as the father-son program. The father-son program is, you know, the age group, recommended age group is 12 to 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be 6th, 7th, 8th grade, and 9th grade boys. So now the, you know, and of course the dads, whatever age they might be. And I've got to tell you, Bob, oftentimes the dads will learn as much as the sons will learn, you know, particularly about mysteries of the female half of the population, you know, about how they ain't like us. I mean, they're different, and we need to learn and appreciate that difference. So it is a good experience of not just learning, but of bonding between fathers and sons, because oftentimes, you know, the father-son relationships can be strained, you know, mm-hmm. and they can be particularly strained during that time period,
right.
You know, of you know, just turning from being a boy into becoming a young man.
Mm-hmm.
And so we create a context for, you know, the boys and the fathers to have fun together, to learn together, and then that will launch them off into, you know, more interactions afterwards. So So, yeah, that's the father-son program for 12 to 15-year-old boys. Now, the mother-daughter program, and you can get information about that, anyone who's interested, on a similar webpage, scd.org/mother-daughter, to find out more. And that, for that program, that is actually, there's two different mother-daughter programs. There's one for mothers and their 10 to 12-year-old daughters, and then for mothers and their 13 to 16-year-old daughters. Mm-hmm. So we found that, we call that the younger girls group is called the program for tweens, and then the older girls is called the program for teens. So 10 to 12-year-old girls, you know, they may be going through puberty as early as 10 years old. In fact, we've seen girls 9 years old beginning to go through puberty. Boys start, you know, typically a little bit later. But that younger girls program for ages 10 to 12 it's the same basic content, but we realize, obviously, the 10 to 12-year-old girl population is quite a bit different from the 13 to 16-year-old girl audience. So the program is, you know, a different subject matter. It's a little more intense for the older girls. Not intense. I mean, you know what I'm saying, Bob. It's more, right. Geared toward the kind of issues that teen girls are facing. I mean, which isn't to say 10, 11, 12-year-old girls are already facing some of those issues, too. So, but anyway, that program will be at Presentation Parish March the 7th of this year from 9 a.m. to 12. And again, you can find out more information about that at scd.org/mother-daughter, all one word.
Very good. Very good. And if you, the child doesn't have a mother or not living with a mother, or doesn't have a father or not living with a father, or they can bring a responsible adult.
Thanks for mentioning that, Bob. Yes, if and sometimes there, oftentimes, especially with the boys, there is not a father who is in the picture. And we have had that happen where, a caring uncle or a grandfather, will bring a young person to that program. So that is totally fine with us. In fact, we have even had, a little bit awkward, but we've had a mother bring her son to mm-hmm. the father-son program because she just, God love her. I mean, and I'm saying this one time, we had this a few years ago. I mean, she just loved her son so much, and there was no other man in, her and there in his life that she could bring in, and she did, attend the program with her son, and it was a good experience for the both of them. So, and sometimes it's not even a matter of there's not somebody, in the picture. Sometimes it's just an absolute conflict that they can't work out. I mean,
sure.
The son might have that date open, but dad's just got to work, or dad's out of town, or just
right.
can't come. So it could even be, in some cases, an older brother who brings the young person to the program.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, Steve, appreciate you taking the time to be with us. I know it's a great program, and
don't you have a son about that age now, Bob? Or yours already getting too old?
Already getting too old. I'm getting younger, but they're getting older.
Well, I gotta tell you and everyone though. Actually, my son, my youngest, he's 13. And he will be attending the program, today or, this upcoming father-son program on February 22nd. In fact, just this morning, I went to talk at the school to the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade boys. And I said, with all these boys, about 40 or 45 of them gathered together, and I got them laughing, and I said, I said, listen, guys, I'm famous. I'm a famous guy. I'm famous for lots of different things. But the thing I'm most famous for is that I'm Dominic Patton's dad. And they all just started laughing. And, he came up to the front and something. So I talked up the father-son program with Dominic at my side. And, hopefully all the kids are going to rally around.
That's good.
22nd. So, but anyway.
Very good. Well, Steve, thanks for taking the time to join us. Thanks for all you do for this program. I know it's a very valuable program.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Thanks, Steve. God bless.
Okay. All right, bye.
Yeah, that's Steve Patton, who works for Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services now. He just does some great work there as as well. So is God calling you? St. Patrick's Seminary Discernment Retreat, February 21st to the 23rd. Conferences by the Most Reverend Thomas A. Daly, the Bishop of Spokane, Washington. You must be a single man, 21 years or older. All meals and lodging is provided, and attendance does not imply further obligation to register. Contact Father Memo, Father Guillermo Hernandez, at he's the Vocations Director here in the Diocese of Sacramento, or 916-733-0258, or email Maricela Smith, msmith@scd.org. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and long-standing support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Hey, this is Chris Owens. I'm the Director of the Office of Family and Faith Formation for the Diocese of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, that God is love and God is just. At the cross you beckon me, you draw me gently to my knees, and I am lost for words, so lost in love. Death, call me into life.
inside.